Hi everyone. How's this for the sound? Okay. I'm going to tell my story, but I'm also going to be reading some of the alcoholic literature because to me it's so powerful. I think even though it sounds mundane and we hear it over and over again, I think it really has a lot of transformation substance to it. And I feel like I've thrived on some of the literature. It really makes a difference in my life. But tonight I wanted to give a little bit of focus to the ACA and 12-step prayers, because I know this is a spiritual practice, and we wonder, well, what does that mean? And for me, part of the crux of a spiritual practice is prayer and meditation. And so I wanted to kind of weave into this to kind of an idea, well, what kind of prayers do we have to move forward in our spiritual path? So I'm going to try and weave those prayers, because there's some of these. I couldn't find all 12 in the, it was a fun study for me, I couldn't find all 12 in the Red Book, the 12 prayers for each step, but I found all 12 AA ones, and usually a lot of the programs were based on AA. And in ACA, we usually replace alcoholic with like alcoholic family and dysfunctional family. So, you know, with the prayers and the steps, that's really common to say, gee, I'm suffering the same as the alcoholic or other compulsive person because I was a member of a family that had that compulsion or dysfunction. And in my case, that was the main problem. I'm mainly an Al-Anon fan or family member, but I'm also I ran into a roadblock in Al-Anon as far as doing my 12 steps. I did do all my 12 steps with a wonderful sponsor. Had a great time meeting for coffee every Saturday and going through the steps and talking to her and just shooting the breeze. It was a wonderful experience. But I also feel that I was roadblocked, especially when it came to the amends. And I just didn't feel safe. I was too nervous. I was in denial about kind of my role in things, because it wasn't safe to think that I had done something wrong, to admit it. So that's a little bit of my background. I've been in the 12 steps programs and in the recovery community maybe for about 5 years or more. And so I was going to tell a little bit of my story. It's going to be a little bit reading my notes, and so it might seem a little bit disjointed, but I'll try and liven it up with just my own info. Okay, said how after a couple years I realized that ACA was a good place to find help and fellowship that I needed. I really like this concept of, yeah, I'm not alone, there's help and there's a fellowship. And I found the leadership very helpful for me. I think for me the component of working with my childhood issues through ACA literature, step work, and fellowship, it is an important piece of my recovery. I think without that, I would have hit a roadblock and not gone on, like I said earlier. Having grown up in a dysfunctional home, I had no idea how it affected me until I started my journey of recovery. I had done other spiritual programs, and I didn't know that I was hit a roadblock. I didn't know that I had all this denial and dysfunction in me that made me so that I really couldn't grow spiritually. And the 12-step program has just been amazing to me because of the work with admitting that I'm powerless, and the work on working with my own dysfunctional behavior, working with my own maladies. I think a lot of spiritual programs, you say, yeah, yay, I did it. I'm successful and I'm done. And isn't this great? And with this one, I'm in the place where there's things that I have to work through. I have to do my character defects. You know, I have to do my list and really work through it. And not only do I have to list my character defects, I have to do steps 5, 6, and 7 where I become willing to change, to transform, to have the spiritual enlightenment, along with humbly asking that happen. And I think the ACA program, with its combination of therapy and spirituality, is what I really have need, and has been such a great help. And I'll go ahead and read a little bit. I believe that the integration component of the ACA program, which is apparently from depth psychology, and has a very good way of reviewing our childhood traumas and incorporating the therapy sessions. So we've got this depth kind of psychology that's interwoven into the program to help people that have had childhood trauma and have dealt with not having the help and the nurturing that we needed as children. And so this combination of therapeutic wisdom and practices is interwoven into this program, which might be a little bit different than Al-Anon has, even though I think Al-Anon, the literature, a lot of ACA literature has kind of sunk into it. Or anyway, there's a bit of depth psychology in there, or a bit of what I call kind of the therapeutic cycle. I don't know what kind of therapy it is. I'm not an expert on different styles of therapy, but there is kind of a real current therapeutic support encouragement through ACA. Like ACA strongly recommends that people work with a therapist when reviewing heavy childhood experiences in their lives. This isn't my case, but they especially encourage it with people who have heavy physical abuse and sexual abuse. That when you go through the ACA program and do your steps and work with a book, that they highly recommend that you get a therapist to help you at the same time you're doing your step work. Then that came up. I'm doing a step. I'm going through the Yellow Book with a group of women, and we got through that point, and it was kind of emphasized. You know, this might be so heavy that you need to get a therapist. And I'm going, whoa. But anyway, the fifth step work can incorporate a therapist that one trusts, where we tell God, ourselves, and another person the nature of our character defects. The trick is that often there's so much denial to get over before we can come clean, and that's kind of where I think the combination of a spiritual program and the therapy together, they work to break that denial. And they're working with me to break the, and helping me to break that denial of what actually happened in my family. There's that whole family idea of don't talk, don't tell. I don't have them all right, but that whole concept of keep it to yourself, and also don't even think about it. Forget it. You're okay. Tough it out. That kind of thing when things are bad. You know, go watch TV. Have a bowl of ice cream. It'll be all right. But anyway, there was a lot of... there are all kinds of reactions to all kinds of alcoholic and dysfunctional environments and family traumas that children develop in. My household had a threatening, somewhat repressive, and depression-laden environment, and there was substance abuse. And there was a kind of a social and moral behaviors that was very confusing. You know, kind of say one thing, but you see something happening in your family that's totally different. And I think that's really hard when you're growing up to be taught, and, you know, go to Sunday school and all this thing, and see something that's totally different. Like when I had a real traumatic thing happen. My cousin that was like my older brothers, because when you typically people. A lot of people get raised by their grandma, and so, you know, I was raised with them a little bit, and with my cousins, especially when I was young. But they had a lot of trauma happen in their family, so there was a lot of repressed grief in my family, and that's a big problem. You know, there's a lot of denial of what was happening, and, you know, kind of a tough it out, you know, we'll be okay, don't think about it kind of thing. And it was really sad. You know, there was a alcoholic car accident my uncle had, and he died. And then the cousins, one cousin had, they were cleaning a gun, 11 and 12 years old, that killed one. And so that was a real traumatic thing in my family, and it didn't really get addressed. It was just kind of like, well, we're not very close with that part of the family anymore. But, you know, you're a little kid, and your mom picks up the phone, and you think it's the end of the world, you know, when your mom says, oh, you know, and then all the repressed grief. And I think that I'm starting to understand a little more of the psychology side of things, of how unhealthy and hard it is when people repress their grief and they don't work through it. And so I think a lot of my childhood trauma of my mom drinking and having emotional depression is a lot of the repressed grief. And that's something that we address through the step work and through therapy. Okay, I wanted to say that, you know, there's always, at least in my family, there were some really good things. Both of my parents are dead now, and I'm visiting both the good and the bad things, and I have a lot of good memories as well as family of origin things that I'm having to get out of denial and work through. The bad things that were not addressed, and I developed unhealthy survival traits. So I had a good environment for developing unhealthy survival traits, the laundry list. I'm still getting at what happened growing up. It's still gradually becoming more alive, and my family of origin stuff is coming alive. My brother recently had a very bad cardiac arrest kind of thing, and so he had to have very serious surgery, and so I flew up there just before my dad died and visited with him, and seeing my brother having heart problems was so analogous to me growing up with him, because he was always in trouble and mentally unstable, and I just tried to, you know, kind of tough it out and ignore it, and no big deal, don't think about it. But now I'm looking at my family of origin and looking at the problems and struggles, and my brother also has problems with drinking and emotional depression and just anger and rage, just like my father had anger and rage. And so I've had to revisit my family of origin by being around my brother, because my brother is so much like my dad. And so I've been able to apply a lot of what I'm learning in the psychological support and the ACA support is, you know, feel the feelings, and also try and apply compassion. Why be judgmental? Why be, what's the right word for it? But anyway, why make it into a big, I don't want to say trauma, but why make it into such a big hopeless or cut and dry ordeal? You know, he's a bad person, he's an alcoholic, he's a loser, you know. Why not apply compassion instead and understand my family of origin and understand, you know, what he's dealt with? And he's dealt with physical hardships. He's had a heart problem, was born premature his whole life, but I was taught, don't look at this, don't worry about it, don't think about it, don't say it. And I was kind of taught to ignore all my brother's travails growing up. He had, you know, heart problems, he had a kind of a mental illness problem. And I was just kind of, I was 5 years older than him, and so I was just taught to, you know, oh, don't worry about it, you know, don't think about it too much, we'll do it. You know, at one time my dad did approach me don't know what to do with your brother, and he went in the school system and cussed them all out and said it was their problem that his son had drug problems. Even though both my mom had a drug problem and they were both heavy drinkers. You know, the kind of that denial kind of thing that I grew up with. But anyway, that's kind of the thing that I'm, some of the things that I'm trying to work through. I'm still getting at what happened growing up. Things are still coming up. That, you know, you do your prayers and you set your intentions and look out. You know, the family of origin stuff is going to come up, and you'll have the opportunity to go through the feelings and get the support, get the help, and grow from it, and become a more compassionate, less judgmental. That's what I'm trying to do, be more compassionate, less judgmental, less cut and dry, more kind of deep and caring. And so I was reading something this morning. It's by this guy named David Rico. But I'll go ahead and read a little bit this first. Growing up in a dysfunctional home is something that hindered me from coming clean and recovering. I have deeply ingrained reactions to growing up in a home where don't feel, don't tell, and don't talk are the norms, and probably don't think is in there too. I was comfortably numb in my ego trips, and I had some substance abuse problems going on as well. It took something traumatic to get me into therapy in the spiritual recovery world. I will tell you about that in a little bit more. And here's a nice quote about caregiving. The kind of caregiving that I wish I would have had from my parents, and the kind of caregiving that we can turn around and give ourselves through having a good spiritual program. Here, and this is the quote, as an aside, we can also remind ourselves that our caregivers were slated by nature to show us how to have all five of the qualities we redirect to. So ideally, if we had good caregiving, we'd learn how to relate to people in a healthy way. David Rico talks about the need to win would be replaced by cooperation. And wouldn't that be great to learn from our nurturers? And that's a thing that we can go back by having a good spiritual program to learn that it's not so important to win, it's nice to cooperate. A very good example that we're dealing with in all the recovery communities is how to reach a group consensus. You know, how to have a loving power, you know, look after us rather than have being a control freak and I have to win and I have the best idea of what we should do and how things are going to go in our group. Oh my God, all these stupid people, I don't know what they're doing. <You know? laughs> And then they talk about going from judgment to compassion, which I'm trying to work through with my brother is a good example. I've been very judgmental to him my whole life, and it's quite a transformative and a soulful thing to try to be working through this and look at him in a different light and see people that really love him and really care about him. I'm kind of like, what's that about? And another way, this is a big one too, go from fear to gratitude. And then another one is from resentment to joy. I'm very resentful to my brother. How wonderful it would be if I could go from that position of being resentful to being joyful that I have a brother that I can care about, you know, that it was my family. Another one is from retaliation to seeking reconciliation. So those are the kind of people in town are talking about this kind of stuff. This guy is a therapist, a spiritual teacher that very much incorporates the 12-step community and ACA community components in his teachings. He was also a preacher, a Catholic church that decided he was in love with a lady and had to leave the church. But anyway, it's so nice to have a spiritual program where you can be open to everything. And he's a really good example. He's also a very into Buddhism. And so you can have this really eclectic approach to what you need. I have had a real eclectic approach. And it was so wonderful to have a 12-step program that says, you know, the God of your own understanding. And wow, woohoo. And so I've really been going for that and enjoying it because there's so much rich, deep things to get support in and to just make life expand and be wonderful. Okay, so what he was saying, and I really liked, I guess this is continuation of the quote from him, if they did not do that, if my parents did not teach me, you know, in a nurturing way, a spiritual practice can fill the gap. I was going, wow, and that's a bit, that sounds very ACA to me, this spiritual practice of, well, go back and be your own loving parent. This one of redirecting, that he was talking about redirecting, does just that. Spirituality does not take the place of our psychological work, looking at our childhood. So he's saying that, you know, it's good to have a good spiritual program, but there's still the psychological work looking at our childhood, feeling what is appropriate to what happened to us. So learning how to have appropriate feelings rather than don't think about it. Feeling or stuffing it, which is one of the laundry list traits. Feeling that it's appropriate to what happened to us. So we start being able to help with feeling what is appropriate to us, resolving our unsolved businesses with the past to whatever extent possible. So that's a bit what I'm doing with my brother right now. And it's and other people in my family. But it's a long, gentle, gradual process. He says, but spirituality does not help us find ways of being in the world as upright, compassionate people. Our spirituality has thereby... they were talking about we need the psychological work, looking at our childhood, feeling what is appropriate to what happened to us, resolving our unfinished businesses with the past, or whatever extent possible. But spirituality does not help us find ways of being in the world as upright, compassionate people. I keep on saying does not. But spirituality does help us find ways of being in the world as upright, compassionate people. Our spirituality has thereby parented us and readied us to parent the world. So I thought that was really nice, that juxtaposition of the idea that of spirituality and the therapy component. So the therapy component is going back to our childhood and kind of working through that stuff, but the spirituality is having that loving, compassionate parent to see me through it all. Okay, let's see. So a little bit of my story. Okay, I'm going to read the third step prayer. Here's an example of 12-step spirituality. God, I'm willing to surrender my fears and to place my will and my life in your care one day at a time. Grant me the wisdom to know the difference between the things I can and cannot change. Help me to remember that I can ask for help. I am not alone. Amen. And that, to me, that is, it really speaks a lot to my experience of getting involved in the recovery community, of discovering I'm not alone and I can ask for help. And so here's a little bit of my story about learning how to ask for help. It took me a while to warm up to the 12-step community. My older son was in AA for 3 years before he had a very frightening and devastating relapse. But during my son's first recovery period, which was, he really had a very good experience with it, a great sponsor and great recovery. And he kept on recommending Al-Anon to me. He said, Mom, you should go to Al-Anon. I told him, you know, why should I have to suffer? You're the one that has the problem. And, you know, at that time, I had no idea the effect on me of having my parents and other family members struggle with alcoholism, substance abuse, and mental illness. The laundry list describes many of the survival traits that I had taken on because of my experience growing up in that environment. As a young woman, I remember my grandmother going out to lunch with me at the old tea house, I don't know if anybody remembers that restaurant, and telling me about my step-granddad, who was an alcoholic, and how much support she was finding in Al-Anon. But I never thought about going in connection with my own parents' alcoholism. It was all kind of, you know, the alcoholism was kind of subtle, but there were deep problems. I was unaware that it was having any effect on me. I didn't realize when these two people were telling me about Al-Anon that, as the first step says, I was powerless and that my life was unmanageable. Okay, here's the first step, another prayer. Dear Lord, I admit that I am powerless over my addiction. And like I said, I couldn't find the ECA one, so I just added, I am powerless over my alcoholic and dysfunctional family. I admit that my life is unmanageable when I try to control it. Help me this day to understand the true meaning of powerlessness. Remove from me all denial of my alcoholic and dysfunctional family. Okay. When I started my recovery program, it started in the hospital. My younger son was in dire straits and being checked into the hospital with acute organ failure. An addiction counselor was there when I helped to check him in, and she told me that my son was probably an addict. That was the beginning of me recognizing that I had a problem in my family that was bigger than me. A friend of my older son had earlier met with my husband, my son, and I, and asked that we send our older son to a rehab. But we felt that was our son's problem. He could work through it, and that it was not ours to solve or spend our life savings on. He did find recovery help from a local government subsidized program that worked with the courts. He was being backed into a corner because of legal problems as a young, I don't know how old he was, but he was pretty young at that time. And so AA was a way out from the court system, and they had a really nice program. But anyway, that was what happened before his first frightening relapse after 3 years of sobriety. This, the second time his relapse, he was looking at prison instead of, you know, just little minor court things. So in the hospital, I was told that there was help and to consider Al-Anon. At the time, I felt hopeless and that I had belonged to churches in the past. I'd already failed in being part of a spiritual community. In the long run, I felt betrayed, ostracized, and like a failure. However, thinking about a community of spiritual believers and how much I was hurt by them, that it didn't work, brought me to tears. I sensed a need for a community of support and the great loss when it failed. I didn't want to feel that very painful feeling of loss and failure again, yet I longed for spiritual renewal and a community of believers. After the hospital, I stayed After the hospital stay, I had hoped that my younger son could go to a rehab and that my insurance would pay for it. However, because of his need for dialysis, he was unable to go. He got some help with a psychiatrist, but eventually was referred to cottage residential care, which was a rehab, after two back-to-back overdoses and ambulance rides. That's feeling pretty powerless and overwhelmed from my side. Psych medicine and recreation street drugs do not mix. I told his psychiatrist I didn't want the paramedics to be his doctors and that he needed help. This was happening at the same time that my older son was facing prison. He later went to the Salvation Army program. I never thought it would be a big deal for me to go to the Salvation Army graduation, but it was quite a soulful experience for me. I appreciate the work they do. You know, he drove the truck and went and picked up things at people's houses and saw all of the Santa Monica neighborhoods. And then he worked in the kitchen. But he was lucky. A lot of people washed out of that program, but he made it through, and he had 6 months of sobriety, so that's a good time span to get your feet on the ground. Meanwhile, at the CRC program that my other younger son was going, because my insurance would pay for him, he's under 26 at the time, I was introduced to the world of recovery and gradually embraced the community. Cottage Rehab Center believes in family therapy and in long-term aftercare, and they believe that it's a family disease. That alcoholism is, every member is diseased by it, is affected by it, and needs recovery and help. They encourage step work for all involved and participation in one or more of the 12-step programs. The family groups, gender, how am I doing with time? I'm okay. The family groups, gender groups, and groups for only family members help me to decompress from the shame, blame, and trauma of my immediate situation. And so that was amazing to feel that decompression by being around a community of people that cared about me and that were experiencing the same situation or similar. I got the support and help I needed from others that were facing the same heartache and family disintegration. I was encouraged to go to Al-Anon, and this time I followed their advice. I have been going to Al-Anon ever since then. I like the Cottage Rehab Center program because it has both a therapeutic component with trained therapists as well as 12-step components. And I was not alone anymore. This is a four-step prayer. Divine Creator, help me to be rigorously honest and to care for myself during this four-step process. Let me practice gentleness and not abandon myself on this spiritual journey. Help me remember that I have attributes and that I can ask for forgiveness. I am not alone. I can ask for help. Amen. So that's part of my story, is learning that I'm not alone and that there's help. During this time, I was encouraged to practice prayer and meditation by the recovery community. Here's the 11th step prayer. Higher power, as I understand you, I pray to keep my connection with you open and clear from the confusion of daily life. Through my prayers and meditation, I ask especially for freedom from self-will, rationalization, and wishful thinking. I pray for the guidance of correct thought and positive action. Your will, higher power, not mine, be done. Through the support of the recovery community, I started my spiritual renewal and was given the permission to believe together in a higher power as I understood. So there's kind of a paradox. We came to believe. I think spiritual practice and faith is a group activity. I think this coming to believe is, for me, it's always been through the connection of other people. It's almost like my higher power, just like the group consensus of, you know, the higher power representing this caring, loving force of the group consensus. That's kind of part of my spirituality too. And says through this, and then I want to go on. Through the support of the recovery community, I started my spiritual renewal and was given the permission to believe together in a higher power as I understood. This new freedom to meditate and pray was helpful. I started going to sanghas that taught mindfulness and loving kindness meditation. I was given the freedom to pursue all kinds of spiritual wisdom, and I eventually even went back to my home religion, which was Christianity and Christian mysticism and. Get a lot out of reading the Christian wisdom material as well. And so that was so neat, because I could never read, for ages, I wasn't able to read the Bible because I had so much negative baggage with it, so much guilt and shame around it. And it was so wonderful to be able to go back, because to me, you know, that's such a significant spiritual wisdom book. And it, so that was part of the fruit of my 12-step program. Then I came to realize that I had strong emotional problems tied to my childhood that made it hard. Childhood that made it hard for me to relate to people in a healthy way because of fear and anxiety. So I was going, it's almost like you go through your 12 steps and then you go again and you go, ooh, I'm going to go deeper here. And so I realized that I was bumping into a lot of fear and anxiety, really scary kind of fear, kind of paralyzing stuff. Much of the ACA laundry list that described the survival traits of those from dysfunctional family fit me. If I was able to do my 12-step spiritual program, if I was going to do it, I needed to come clean, and my childhood experiences were getting in the way. My moral compass and sense of being safe enough to make amends and admit I'm wrong is hindered by my fear of what happened within my family growing up. Here's the fifth step prayer. So I'm kind of in the middle of the 5-6-7 routine of cleaning up my act. Fifth step prayer. Divine character, divine creator, thank you for this chance to speak honestly with another person about the events of my life. Help me accept responsibility for my actions. Let me show compassion for myself and my family as I revisit my thinking and actions that have blocked me from your love. Restore my child within. Restore my feelings. Restore my trust in myself. Amen. Here's the six-step prayer. God, I'm now ready that you should remove from me all my defects of character, which block me from accepting your divine love and living with true humility toward others. Renew my strength so that I might help myself and others along this path of recovery. And here's the seventh step prayer. I call it character of defects. God, I'm now ready that you should remove from me all my defects of character, which block me from accepting your divine love and living with true humility toward others. Renew my strength so that I might help myself and others along this path of recovery. Okay, how am I doing with my time? Is that a good break time? Oh, 5 minutes? That's a good break time? Done?
No, you got 5 minutes.
Oh, 5 minutes. Oh, good. This is going to work out just about right. Okay, the thing that I'm going through right now, and I'm very excited, I was talking about how my family was disintegrating, family disintegration, I've definitely felt that. And now I'm getting into the idea of integration. This that part of the 5-6-7, you know, they say when you do your fifth step, working on your character defects, don't just hang out there. They say do your sixth and seventh step. And part of the sixth and seventh step is integrating. And that, my understanding is that has a lot to do with going back and making, feeling the feelings and being your own loving parent and integrating them. One example I had of this is, this was in a therapy session, this person, kind of a dream Jungian therapist, I was, she said to, you know, recall something that had happened to me. And I recalled it, and I went there. I was recalling when my mom had gotten the phone call that either my uncle had died or my cousin had died. And to me, that was the end of the world. You know, that was, my mom was crazy. You know, it was like we couldn't function anymore. And I went there as an adult, as a parent, and was able to tell myself, wow, she really cared about her sister. She really loved her sister, and that was devastating to her, which was totally different than my childhood experience was. It was kind of like, wow, it's the end of the world. Something's terrible, and my mom's falling apart, which is different than, wow, my mom was grieving and saddened because she loved her sister so much. And so that was kind of an example. To me, I think that feels a little bit like integration, going back there and looking at that in a different light. And so I'm going to read this a little bit. There is a key distinction between defects of character and the survival traits of laundry list. So stuffing your feelings is an example of, you know, a survival trait. Adult children readily identify with the survival traits. However, they struggle with claiming defects of character, like admitting I was wrong. Most adult children willingly admit to being people pleasers or fearing authority figures, but balk at claims of being judgmental, dishonest, or jealous. Yeah, that's a good one. Prejudice is one of mine too. Adult children tend to feel relief when reading the laundry list traits because they realize they are not unique in actions or thought. They often feel shame or dread when hearing a list of defects of character. These are the distinguishing points between defects of character and survival traits developed as children. Admitting defects of character can be terrifying for adult children who have grown up in perfectionist homes. So that was kind of where I graduated from Al-Anon into ACA, that whole idea that I needed to address some of these deep childhood issues with the help of, you know, the therapeutic insights as well as, you know, the ACA spiritual program. To admit an error or to appear less than perfect is equated with extreme fear or feeling of being unduly vulnerable. This is, I'm quoting from our book. Some of us experience a plummeting feeling in our stomachs when it is suggested that we have defects of character. Admitting defects had no real value in most dysfunctional homes, so we see no value in it before coming to ACA. We must remember that we are recovering in ACA. Admitting our defects of character does not make us inferior or inadequate. In fact, it means we are human. I'll read a little more. We must be patient with ourselves as we integrate the laundry list traits in steps 6 and 7. So this whole component of integration as part of the recovery, part of working on our character defects. It's not like, oh, here's my character defects, I'm such a loser, goodbye. No, it's here's my character defects, help me with this. You know, there is help, and things can get better. So the traits are deeply anchored because they are the defense system we developed as children under difficult situations, so that we really need some help with this. We must acknowledge a certain amount of respect for the traits and for ourselves for figuring out how to survive our dysfunctional homes. As children, they were the difference between living and dying in some cases. My dad had quite a temper, so I kind of had to follow his directions pretty closely. We survive, but in ACA, we want to move beyond mere survival. The safe harbor we find in ACA meetings is the starting point for transforming our survival traits. We listen to others share how they did it. We learn that the integrated trait of people-pleasing might look like this. We do helpful things for ourselves and accept praise instead of constantly pleasing others and pushing away compliments. So that's someone learning to look after their own self. By transforming our people-pleasing manner, we do not stop caring about others. However, we stop going over the line to ensure that we are never abandoned. I think that's enough. Okay. In ACA, okay, I guess this is for me. In ACA, I'm gradually remembering and sharing what happened to me as a child and how that has created survival traits that bear the fruit of my character defects. So that's something that in our step group is starting to come alive to me, this idea that repressed grief, you know, childhood experiences cause these survival traits. And then out of the survival traits come the prejudices. You know, I'm too afraid to be different than my parents. It's dangerous. You know, I have to please them. And so I better be prejudiced just like them. You know, that kind of thing of, you know, our moral ambiguity is okay, because that's the way, that was what was modeled for me. But that's a big part of ACA, is going back and seeing, you know, what's the spiritual practice, and usually the idea is that God is your first parent, your first parents are God, and so that's your God, and then you're learning how to replace, you know, this fear and this anxiety around your parents is part of the program. But anyway, that survival traits and the integration of the survival traits going back is so important, because that's what breeds are what bears the fruit of the character defects. That whole idea of hurt people, not being able to go back and integrate and remember and feel and share those events with people in our support group, the therapist, will bear the fruit later of compulsiveness, you know, alcoholism, drug addiction, stuff, you know, always being cold and heartless, that kind of thing, even though it's mainly someone's got stuffed feelings and they're scared of everybody. So getting help with that kind of thing is kind of what I've learned, that there is help. You know, I was saying that I belong to other, you know, spiritual paths that didn't have that component to them, that component of, yeah, you got to come clean, you got to work through these things if you're going to be okay. You know, it's like there's support with, you know, great spiritual teachings, great spiritual wisdom, but the support to get through the blocks, like I know I was reading a little bit about the blocks, the things that stop that ability to have a compassionate, loving relationship in the community, and the pieces that I missed growing up because of my parents, you know, the generational problems that they had, and the unmet, unresolved grief was a lot of it, I think. But I'm still kind of working on my family of origin stuff. So attitudes about money and class and race that make me feel ashamed have been looked at. So that was a big part of my fifth step, is my attitudes about money and class and race, because that's what my parents taught me. And I've had to kind of integrate. Every time I find myself doing weird stuff around that, I go, oh, I guess that's how my parents taught me. And I, you know, if I can remember specific events, all the better, and realize, yeah, that's not too cool, is it? You know, that doesn't work out very well. That's not very compassionate, and it makes me miserable. And so learning how to, you know, work this five, six, and step, seven step, and really telling somebody else what I'm struggling with, that, oh, yeah, this is what I'm struggling with. It's amazing how much of it just gets lifted away, and how much I find myself not worrying about, you know, being prejudiced or worrying about money or class, and then just living in the present and looking at people as their own self, you know, in a compassionate way. But anyway, I grew up watching my parents drink and cause harm to others and be reckless with themselves. Like I said, my uncle died in a drunk driving accident when I was a little girl. My cousin shot his brother. They were 12 and 11 years old. The great sadness and problems with drinking and mental illness were not addressed or looked at in my family. Instead, social status and achievements were addressed. You're good. You're okay. You know, don't think about the bad stuff. Showing a little class was important. There were many things that were helpful that I was taught and experienced, but I was not taught how to deal with greed or envy or all these character defects that stopped me from growing spiritually and being a loving, kind person. And that's why I'm so grateful for the 12-step community and the therapeutic community. Thank you.